You're muted.
What's that?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes, you're right. Here we go.
Thanks.
You hear the limitations in this? You want more, or do you get the idea?
I get the idea. Okay. I was hoping someone would say that.
That's a good idea. That's a good idea. We'll
but
come
it,
back.
It's really interesting the way you word it, though, that you acknowledge that this guy is a genius, but you're like working with, you're trying to compose poetry or a play or something with only 50 word vocabulary.
Yeah. Or,
that's an interesting way of thinking about it, because it's undeniably beautiful.
Or maybe it's, what's that? Yeah, it's not that beautiful, but it's not up to the standard of the Dome of Florence.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And it's also, it gets boring. They did amazing things horizontally, cannons, inverted cannons, all kinds of stuff like that, that substituted for the fact that you couldn't really change key or anything like that. So, the composers, Forbach, and here's the interesting thing, for those of you who have heard of the C minor series, it's really part of the whole struggle to establish the true system. Because what you're hearing there is not the true system. It was the true system of the universe is a system of 12 tones and 12 major keys and 12 minor keys. And that was created before the first person whistled on a flute. It was a matter of discovering it, and like the true nature of the solar system, it was suppressed. And thus, as Matt pointed out, what reason is there that we could not have landed on the moon 300 years ago if these ideas had not been suppressed? They were known. These things were known. And why did Bach have to do what he did in the 1700s? It could have been done a lot later. But if it hadn't been for Kepler and Bach, it also might never have gotten done. So there's nothing inevitable about it. So I'm going to play for you a couple of things here. This is what we call a diatonic scale, a major scale. Diatonic seems like a big word, but in Greek it just means through the tone, meaning it starts on one tone, C, and ends at a higher C. And people think of it as an eight-note scale because there's eight notes in it, but there's really only seven different notes because the eighth one is a repeat, okay? Okay, you've all heard that, I think. And then there's another form of it, the minor scale. And this is the minor scale. And I use particularly the white note scales just to make a point, because those are the same notes as you have in the hexachord system as I showed you. This is what's called the chromatic scale. This one right here. Mm-hmm. How many notes were in that?
12,
yeah, I wrote it down. Yeah. The 13th note, like the other scale, the 13th note is a repeat. So there's actually 12 different notes. Those are all what are called half tones. The way that's represented on the piano is from one key to the next, whether it's to a black key or to another white key. It's just moving through each adjacent key. So the chromatic scale was one way for composers to investigate and make a point about the actual true nature of the system. They knew that that had to be the case. And before Bach, 100 years before Bach, really around the time of Kepler, you had people looking into this. Here, for instance, is a piece by an Italian composer called Frescobaldi. And see if you can hear that chromatic scale in there. I'll just play a bit of it. Can you all hear that?
Yes.
Okay.
It was like the first section, the first few notes that we played.
Yeah, and then it's in kind of a fugue with itself. But is it very interesting? Kind of limited. But it's a scientific experiment, and that's what's important about it. Because they're actually experimenting in how to create the actual nature of the real musical system as opposed to what has been imposed. And it's also a question of tuning, because the tuning with the using these rational numbers is also wrong. And you'll hear that in the next one. Is Pim in the room? Oh, there you are. Tell me how to pronounce this guy's name.
Zvili.
Okay. And how do you pronounce the Udekerke?
Which one?
The old church in...
Oh,
the Oudke. Okay. Yeah, he was the chief organist at the church, the old church in Amsterdam. It's interesting to me that Rembrandt was about 15 when he died, and everybody attended services there, so the young Rembrandt probably heard him play in that church. But he was known as the builder of organists. His students went to Germany, went all over northern Germany, and created the hotbed out of which Bach came. So there's a direct connection between Svelenc and Bach. This is a fantasia, a chromatic fantasia by him, which is also exploring this. It's a good 100 years before Bach. But you can also hear that it's out of tune, because the question of establishing this system also involves the question of a tempered tuning. And actually, I have There are performances that are much better than that. But again, don't just think of it as...
Pardon?
Oh, sorry. Okay. It's, again, don't think of it as just old music that seems kind of boring compared to what we do now, but see it as part of a scientific experiment with these guys trying to establish the actual system. Bach, in a very early piece, worked with exactly the same thing. This is his Chromatic Fantasy and Fugue. This is the fugue part.
Well, no.
He I think had established his own well-tempered tuning by this time. But if you listen to the fugue, you will hear that it's all based on using all 12 tones in half-tone steps. End of the fantasy. He's kind of taking it to an extreme. He really wants to make a point here. I have to play you the beginning of this because he never did this quite again, but I think he was really a bit angry about what was going on because he really kind of goes a little bit overboard here.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well, it's fun, and I hate to stop it. But I think it's time to do what Matt said and go just back a bit and compare that to the earlier piece. It's a couple, 300 years earlier, admittedly.
So
but this is the piece written for the dedication of the... And you saw all those sharps and flats, and he was going keys all over the place. Compare it to this. Okay, we don't need to do any more of that, but I mean, you see that Bach is working in a different universe, a different language than what we heard with the earlier stuff. Now, one of the other ways that the composers were experimenting in and looking into the entire idea of 12 tones was what is known as the circle of fifths. This is the circle of fifths here. This is actually an experiment done by the Pythagoreans in ancient Greece. This is our modern terminology for it. First of all, you know what I mean by a fifth? Okay. Sounds complicated. Here's the note C. Count up five notes. One, two, three, four, five. That's the fifth. It's the fifth degree of the scale. Okay, so five up from C is G. C, D, E, F, G. And even though it's written there, can somebody else please figure out what the next fifth will be?
D.
D. And then count up five from there. D, E, F, G, A. A, B, C, D, E. Because you only go to G and you start again at A. Up to B, and then up to F sharp. And then something interesting happens. F sharp, that's F sharp. This is G flat. They're the same note, especially on the piano. So let's start counting it in flats. We go from G flat to D flat, D flat to A flat, A flat to E flat, B flat to, and B flat to F, and then we're back to C. How many tones is that?
Sharps are represented by the hashtag symbol and flats are...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. How many tones is that? You want to count?
12.
It's 12. So just by doing that, just by putting together 12 fifths and seeing that they end up at the same place, that was another indication that there were actually 12 tones. In the system, here's what it sounds like. Yeah, 12, 7 octaves. Takes the whole piano, but what they did is they divided them by half or by quarters and put them all on the same scale. However, this is also, if Pythagoras actually did this, and it's hard to find out, I love it because he discovered the flaw in his own system. Because these are all... Say, if this is C at 2, then over 7 octaves you'd have C at 2, 4, 8, 16. You're doubling it. 32, 64, 128, 256, right?
Oh, if you doubled the frequency.
You're doubling the frequency because an octave is double frequency.
Okay.
And this
yeah.
covers 7 octaves.
Yeah.
So if you start at C, we'll call it, say we'll call it C at 4, then the next C would be C at 8, the next C would be C at 16, 32, 64, 128, 256, 512. Now, the ratio for the fifth is supposed to be 3 over 2, 1.5. So who has a calculator on them, on their phone? Anybody?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, and what is who?
I was going to stop there. It's ready.
Just start, take 4 as the first C, multiply it by 3 over 2, which is 1.5, and you do that 12 times. And you should come up with 512.
So you take the first number, so the first C is 4?
Yeah, the first
divided by
1.5, which that should take you up to G.
Okay, multiply by 1.5.
Yeah. 12 times. So multiplying by 1.5 should take you up to G, then do it again, it should take you up to D. And when you get through it 12 times, you should be at a multiple of 4, like 256 or 512, one of the frequencies for C.
518.9.
What'd you get?
518.9.
Yeah, it's supposed to be 512, but it's 518.9. This is what the Greeks called the comma. In other words, these ratios as perfect fractions are off. They're off. The 3 over 2 ratio is just a bit too big. And the reason why so much, why they couldn't, one of the reasons they couldn't write in all 12 tones during this whole period is because they were really trying to stick to those ratios, just like, you know, the astronomers were trying to stick to the circular notions of the planets. And therefore, you ended up getting an instrument that was not attuned in itself. I have a demonstration, but I won't do it now. I have a keyboard at home. You can just put it into these tunings. But what happens with them, you try to play something in C major, and it sounds fine. You try to go to A major, and it's completely out of tune. So you can't play in all the different tunes at the same time. Okay? So that's one way of that's another way of actually conducting a scientific investigation of the true nature of the musical system. A scientific investigation and an attempt to establish it. Now let's go back to this. Here's the interval of a fifth, C to G. Now, we'll try a half tone above G, G to A flat, half tone beneath C, to B. Bach experimented with this long before the musical offering. In the well-tempered clavier, which is 1722, he wrote a fugue that goes like... If you take the outside interval, A flat to B, that's called a diminished seventh, a very dissonant interval, which was also banned, of course. And when we get to Beethoven, I'll show you how that also reflects the investigation of the entire musical universe and an attempt to establish it. But for the meantime, let's look at Bach's musical offering. And I really encourage people, even if you find it a little hard to follow at times, if you get 10% of it, you're doing good and you'll get the idea, okay? But also, if somebody says, I don't understand something, just say so, and we'll slow down and we'll look at it again, okay? Now, does anybody know the story behind the musical offering?
You know, the Bach visit the king, and the king asked him as a test, you know, of his genius to compose music on the spot.
Right. The king was Frederick the Great. And he was a big fan of Bach's music. And his court musician was Bach's son, Carl Philipp Emanuel Bach. Okay, here we go. So, he invited old Bach to come to the court one day and said, I'm going to give him a theme to really challenge him. And I sincerely doubt if he thought of it by himself. I think he probably went to Bach's son and said, give me something that's really going to give your dad a hard time. So he played this flute, this theme on the flute for Bach, and he said, I want you to make me a six-part fugue out of this. And Bach said, well, I'll improvise a three-part one for you right away. And he did. It's magnificent. And I don't know how many people could take a theme like this and just do that. He said, the six-part one I'm going to have to work on a little bit. Here's the theme. And see if you can see how it relates to everything we've been discussing. Anybody?
He's inverting it.
What?
He's inverting it.
Well, just in terms of the basics, there's two ideas we've looked at. One was this idea of this interval, the diminished seventh. And the other was the chromatic scale descending by half steps. He's combined the two of them. There were composers who tried to, So he's looking at two different things that have been addressed separately. He's addressed them separately, individually, in different places. This is the first time they've really been put together. Okay? So it is actually something that it's exploring the true nature of the musical system and trying to establish it. Bach wrote the six-part fugue and sent it to the king with a whole bunch of puzzle canons, which are just magnificent. Christine knows some of them. For the king to figure out, because he wanted to challenge him, and he said he gave him one voice, and then he gave him a little clue in Latin as to how to solve it. Seek and ye shall find, things like that. He gave him one that goes backwards and forwards at the same time, ones that turn upside down, one that turns upside down and go twice as fast, one that goes through all the keys and ends up through all 12 keys. He did all of that stuff. But his great accomplishment was to actually set this in six voices. So let's listen to a little bit of it. We'll just listen to a bit of it. And what I'd like you to do is just to hear it in its essence. Put your hand up each time you hear one of the voices enter, because they don't come in all the time. They're staggered. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. See if you can hear it. Just put your hand up when you hear another voice enter. There's one.